Tim Travers has absolutely no arc. He's an absolutely awful human being. But that does not work for the lead character of a feature. Once we landed on self-love, once we hit that, I was like, oh yeah, that's it. And I think it actually speaks more to dig into self-love when it's someone who maybe shouldn't. And I think there's a good message in there in finding self-acceptance.
You brought up Dead Ringers, and I don't think I even watched that until about a year, year and a half ago. It was a weird blind spot for me, Cronenberg-wise. The whole time I was watching it, I was going like... You only had to play two guys.
Whatever, Jeremy.
The whole film is about learning to love yourself and low self-esteem. The legitimate fear that if I was trapped in a room full of dozens of other me's, I would somehow still be the least popular one. One of the memories that will always stay in my heart. Keith David came to set and I didn't have a chance to go meet him. And when we wrapped the scene, I went over to go introduce myself to find him, Sam, and another one of the actors running their scene together. That was, as a director, a heartwarming moment for me.
Hey everyone, I'm Billy and welcome back to Half the Picture. Today, we've got another great guest duo for you, following up on last week's Heather's episode. We've got director Stimson Sneed and star Samuel Dunning on to talk about their new film, Tim Travers and the Time Traveler's Paradox. It was such a blast having Stimson and Sam on the pod to chat about Tim Travers, which, in case you haven't guessed from the title, is a science fiction time travel movie. It's a really fun sci-fi romp in the style of shows like Red Dwarf, which Stimson, Sam and me are big fans of, so we talked about that a lot, and I really think you're going to enjoy this chat. By the way, remember to like and subscribe to the podcast as it really helps us get more amazing guests on the show. So without further ado, let's roll on my conversation with Stimson Sneed and Sam Dunning. Enjoy. Hi guys, welcome to Half the Picture. How are we doing today?
Doing great. Great to meet you.
Likewise. So we've got you on the pod today to talk about your new film, Tim Travers and the Time Traveler's Paradox, which I've seen. It's a ton of fun. And yeah, for a kickoff, I guess, I wanted to ask, how did the two of you, I mean, obviously, you know, Samuel, you're the star, and Stimson, you're the writer director, and also, you know, co-star. Like, how did the two of you first meet? And at what point did making Tim Travers and collaborating on that enter the conversation?
Sam, did you want to take that one?
I'll start it, then you continue it.
Absolutely.
We're getting very good at the dance of this story. Really, what happened is we met at a film festival. It was this really teeny tiny, middle of nowhere, doesn't even exist anymore, first year film festival. And we both had short films that we had made in that festival and in the same block. Mine was called Rick and Ruby. It was a short horror comedy that I was using as a vehicle for myself to, you know, promote my acting ability. And there was a poster for it back there. And it was part of Stimson's block, and he saw my performance in that. And then later that summer, he reached out and told me that he had a script and that if I liked it, it was mine. And that was the Tim Travers short film. And now I'll let you take over, Stimson, and tell them what I lied about.
Well, all of that's true, but he's just leaving out the creepier details. While he and I were on this panel with the short films, I had already kind of made up in my mind that, ooh, this is the guy. Because I had written the script for Tim Travers a month or two previously. And I had originally planned to cast myself and then realized that was a really stupid decision and shelved it. And so I had put the project aside. And so there is a photograph, and it's on both of our Instagrams, of Sam talking. He's in the middle of an interview on this panel. And you can see me behind him in the photograph, eyeballing him. Top to bottom, I come off as very pervy and creepy. This is not a flattering image of me. I come off as very pervy in it, but that's literally me over there going, oh, he's the one.
And that didn't put you off, Sam.
I didn't notice until after the fact. I just thought that whatever I was saying in those photos must have been extremely genial and smart sounding.
Yes, because when we think of Tim Travers, genial is the word that comes to mind. But yeah, I reached out a few months later. He liked the script. We had one or two delays because this was still the middle of the pandemic. I think we were well into 2021 before we actually got to film the short. And then the short just turned out great. Went to festivals. We both had a great time with it. And we both kind of thought that was the end of it. Short was good. We were done. Move on with our lives. But then I had this other project that fell through at the last second. But I already had a crew. I already had time booked out with the studio. I already had financing. So it was like, I need to shoot something and I need to shoot it right now. And so I called up Sam and we pulled this project together at just lightning speed just to not lose the production window.
Wow. So it was a real efficiency of process then is what I'm getting. Because like you say, so the Chin Travers started out as a short and then it expanded to feature length to 100 minutes. And as a follow-up question to that, I wanted to ask, like, what was it like for the pair of you as both star and, you know, filmmaker expanding that short film to feature length? I mean, for you, Samuel, obviously playing the main character, that must offer an opportunity to really go deeper into that character. And also for you, Stimson, you know, as the writer and the director, you can then go deeper into the story itself as well and that character's arc and, you know, and the scope of the film just gets bigger. So yeah, what was that like for the two of you? What challenges did that present?
I know on my end, I mean, that was kind of what actually got it to be brought into the world in the first place, is that we had a conversation when he was trying to figure out what to fill this hole in his and the production company's schedule with. And he was like, what if we did it feature length Tim Travers, would you want to do that? What do you see in something like that? Like, is there something to make it worth going back to this IP? And we started kind of spitballing, and I was just like, you know, full of like fun ideas of like what we could play with more time with this guy. And we landed on just like, well, what, like, everybody loves talking about self-love these days, what if we take it very, very literally?
And the other part of that conversation was, part of the reason we needed to have that, because it wasn't simply a matter of was Sam available and did we want to do it. The whole joke of the short is that Tim Travers has absolutely no arc. The joke of the short is that no matter what we do to this character, he is fundamentally unwilling to change even a little, which is fine for a short and a lot of fun, but that does not work for the lead character of a feature. So that's why if we were going to do this, what do we want to do with this character? And that's why I put the question to Sam first as the one who was in his character's head. That is the thing that, as even though that was part of the DNA, that's the thing that absolutely needed to be changed in adapting to feature.
And yeah, and again, it was sort of like, it just opened the door in such a way that it, you know, it was just fun just even be able to throw around ideas about like, anything and everything we could do, because it is this character with no arc, and it's like, how do you, one, what are we going to do to give him an arc, but is also fun as a moviegoer, but also fun for me to play and for Stimson to write and direct. And I think we found a really great in to do all of those things.
It was a surprisingly short conversation once we landed on self-love, and I think it was Sam who brought that up, but once we hit that, it was like, oh yeah, that's it. First off, it lets us do some particular jokes that I've always wanted to put on camera, but it really kind of dug into the nitty gritty, because part of the problem with the Tim Travers, just writing wise as a character, is he's an absolutely awful human being, like just absolutely awful. It's easy to talk about self-love when it's, oh, here's a misunderstood nice person. Tim is not a misunderstood nice person. He is a train wreck. And I think it actually speaks more to dig into self-love when it's someone who maybe shouldn't. And I think there's a good message in there in finding self-acceptance. But all of that was born out of that relatively short conversation. And then process-wise, so writing-wise, this was very Machiavellian writing. So because we had 90 days from when we decided to make the movie to when the camera rolled, and there was no script at all. 90-day window to roll camera. So the first thing is I just needed to will the script into existence and make sure the structure was correct. Because as long as the structure is correct, the locations are correct, the scenes are correct, what's going to be in it, then pre-production can get going. We can start casting. Sam can start working on the character. We can start hunting for locations. And that gives me the rest of the time to make it, you know, a good script as opposed to a script that just exists. So the first thing was just figuring out what I had available to me that I could get for cheap. So it was stuff like, well, I have a radio station that I can get for free. So there's going to be a radio station location in it. I have this 20-acre abandoned aluminum factory that looks like the freaking post-apocalypse, and every scene it's in looks like $1 million. I can get that for next to nothing. So we're going to set some scenes there. I have a 7-foot-tall, fully functional hamster wheel. I don't know how, but we're putting a 7-foot-tall, fully functional hamster wheel in there. So a lot of that writing process was just working backwards. Here's what I have. How do I build a story out of that? And so that's part of how the writing process on that, which honestly was a lot of fun, because when you're able to, when you have a long time to write a script and you get into those deep philosophical discussions, sometimes your head can go so far up your own ass that you never actually get to the point of just making it work. Working with this sort of puzzle approach, is actually a lot, the Roger Corman approach, as another interviewer referred to it. It really helps focus things down to exactly what something needs to be.
Yeah, totally. As I say before, there's an efficiency of process where you're working on a low budget and, you know, tight schedule. You have to be efficient and fast. But with really complicated stuff for the both of you. I mean, like, the movie is a science fiction film. It's quite as epic in a lot of ways. I mean, there's VFX sequences sort of threaded throughout involving, you know, time travel, of course, but also, like, you know, black holes and singularities, and the kind of the vastness of the cosmos is represented by the time you get to the end of this film, you know. And also for you, Samuel, obviously, like, you're playing, I think, at least sort of 14, if not more, versions of time travelers. I mean, I think there are even more, you know, so that's complicated as well. And obviously doing all of that on a tight schedule, you know, sort of quite minimal resources and making it look as good as it can, but also just, you know, flow and work is a challenge. And I wanted to ask for the both of you, like, what kind of challenges did that present? And, you know, it's also, I guess, for you, Samuel, specifically, like, playing all those different versions of yourself. There are shots, wide shots, where there's like 14 of you in the same shot. I mean, what was that like, you know, to put together, and the challenges that faced as well, but also more broadly?
Yeah, no, I mean, like, thankfully we'd done the short ahead of time, so I already knew what we were getting into, and just kind of how Stimson works and how these effects are going to have to work to pull off the magic trick of me talking to myself. But obviously, because of the scale of it, I just learned very quickly I had to compartmentalize or else I'd go nuts. With the short, I kind of learned the whole thing, you know, all... whatever.
I remember you had a panic day on the short where you realized you'd memorized it the wrong way of the short.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. And I had it, the whole short, like page one to the end, perfectly memorized. And I was like, all right, well, that is not possible with this 95 page script. I have to break it down into bite-sized pieces and figure it out. So basically what I did is I... just became extremely familiar, obviously, with the plot, the progression of the character and his affiliated selves. And then I just literally just broke it down to like one day at a time. So the night before a day, I would just refresh just what we were shooting for that day and just that dialogue and just where I was coming from, like whatever, like every scene that we're shooting, where I was a moment before that in the script. And, you know, it's like, it's kind of typical actor stuff, but like, but doing it on such a scale that like I had to do this for not only myself, but then six other selves. And so that was kind of what I did on a personal prep level. And then on the day, basically it was me, Stimson, and our script supervisor sharing a brain and, three parts of one mildly operating brain. And so if any one of us got confused as to what was happening, the other could yell out, wait, whoa, like, is this the dumb Tim or the smart Tim? And then someone would go, it's the dumb one. Oh, okay. Got it. And so like it became, you know, kind of as simple as that, because until the end, all the Tims are relatively similar because they're just one guy separated by a few minutes. But also that means that their tiny little differences are a little harder to pick up in the lines of dialogue. So that means that sometimes, like I said, we'd have to like literally yell out to each other, like, wait a second. Whoa. I know the name of this one, the letter, but I know I can't remember the context. Somebody please help. And then obviously by the end, the larger differences have existed, and they're almost different characters at that point.
Well, I was going to say, the other part of how we did it, like writing wise, is the Tims do not get equal billing. Like, there are basically two Tims who are hero Tims, but there's maybe six Tims who do 90% of the talking. Even of the non-heroes, there's maybe six supporting Tims who do 90% of everything. So in any given scene, if somebody's speaking, it's one of those six. There's the asshole Tim, there is the Tim who everybody shits on all the time, there is the smart Tim, and there's the horny Tim. There's a lot of unequal billing among our Tims.
And for you, Samuel, I guess you've kind of almost got to channel a bit of Jeremy Irons in Dead Ringers when you do that. Those little meticulous nuances and like the subtleties of behavior that you've got to just do to separate each of those sort of main Tims. And actually, on that front, I want to ask, you know, this being a genre film, a science fiction film, like what kind of films and filmmakers were influencing you, Stimson, in the making of this film? And also for you, like Sam, like what kind of actors or performances were you kind of thinking of, if any, when you were performing the character?
For me, influence-wise, believe it or not, nothing time travel related. I wanted to do my own thing. My creative influences for projects like this always go back to the seed of everything comedy for me, which is Red Dwarf. For me, Red Dwarf is absolutely the comedic DNA, right down to some of the visual style choices in this film.
I can certainly see that, even in the kind of grunginess of the warehouse and the production design. There's a real sort of, it does parallel, actually, now that you say that, really strongly with Red Dwarf.
Oh, yeah. That is the actual strongest influence. It's funny because people always assume there's some sort of time travel influence. It's like, no, not really. Not really. I wanted to do my own thing. But Red Dwarf, oh, that's all over this.
Fantastic. I mean, I'm a huge Red Dwarf fan, so that's really gratifying to hear, especially as Red Dwarf these days sometimes doesn't get its due as for how brilliant it is. That's really great to hear.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And how about you, Sam?
Again, I don't really have a great answer. Like, it's funny. You brought up Dead Ringers, and I don't think I even watched that until about a year and a half ago. It was a weird blind spot for me, Cronenberg-wise. And I think the whole time I was watching it, I was going like, you only had to play two guys.
Whatever, Jeremy.
So Jerry Irons, you got the
give me a knighthood for that. Come on, man. All joking aside, yeah. I mean, like, and then like people bring up like Multiplicity to me. I've never actually seen Multiplicity, which everyone's always just sort of shocked by. And I'm just like, well, I don't know. I didn't do any homework. I was like, I did the short. And that went over well. So I was like, just keep doing your thing. And it, like, cause it's a, not to say like there's no benefit in like looking at other movies where people play multiple roles, but I'm sort of like, I don't know, at the end of the day, I'm sort of like, yeah, but how is it different than any other acting other than this? Just a lot of work. I mean, like, how is it different than like, you know, all the Marvel movies where people are talking to golf balls on, you know, on sticks and they'll get Chris Hemsworth in a week later to talk to the other side of the golf ball, you know? So like, people are doing this kind of stuff all the time and still make it compelling and make it work. Also, just like the sheer daunting amount of work I had, I was also like, I don't have time to like worry about channeling some other something. I just need to get the lines out of my mouth in a convincing way so that we can move on with the day. I will say, also grew up massive Red Dwarf fan, so there was some kindred dialogue there, maybe, you know, subliminally or something, subconsciously.
I mean, we talk about Tim Travers, obviously, but now that you mentioned Red Dwarf, I mean, I'm curious to ask, I mean, you guys both have seen like fans, we do have a favorite episode of Red Dwarf or a favorite series, perhaps, you know, maybe that's a tricky question, but like, I mean, there's so many great ones.
I always tend to go towards series 6 and series 4 a lot. I love when they're trapped in Starbug and just Starbug for the full season. I mean, it's hard to pick an all-time favorite episode, though. Like, that's not...
I would agree. Those middle seasons, I think, are really
like, some of the best for me. Coming to mind is, like, you know, when they go to the backwards world, that one.
Oh, always have won one.
I remember as a kid, I was just like, genius!
Yeah.
Really good.
Yeah, the polymorph, it always a winner.
Yeah, polymorph is a great one.
Dwayne Dibley, yeah, can't get wrong with that. I mean, Tennant is backwards is basically just Tennant played for laughs, you know, and that's even better.
Yeah, we should be slagging on Tennant more often for just stealing perfectly good idea that was more fun and took less time to go through the whole thing.
Tell me about it. I always love backwards because there's this wonderful behind the scenes clip of the restaurant owner shouting at him backwards. Yes. But they played it in the behind the scenes forward. It's him going, I'm not talking to you. I'm actually talking at the sad person who has no life, who is going to record this and play it backwards just to hear what I'm saying.
And in the 90s, that would have taken hours and hours of work to get that copy that over reel to reel to like a tape and rewind it and get imagine, and then you hear that and you're like, what am I doing with my life, you know?
I don't know, I think that would make me, I would feel seen. I think if I put that much work into hearing what the person said only to discover that they were directly addressing me and acknowledging the work I had to do this, like, I mean, I know who I am, I'm a weird nerd. I would feel seen. I would feel very seen at this moment.
Oh yeah, throw one more out is I forget. It's not the polymorph episode, but it's the one where Lister fights the Vindaloo monster when he's...
Yes.
DNA. RoboCop.
DNA, yes.
DNA, yeah, that's a cracking episode.
That one's one of... Basically, any episode where you get something big and goopy and they're using some sort of, like, over-the-top SFX going on, low-budget SFX, I'm like, those are the best.
Yeah, low budget effect, because I love that when you see people with absolutely no budget, because at its height, it still had no budget and what they're getting away with it. If I had to pick a favorite episode, it's when they go to the Psi Moon, where the entire planet becomes Rimmer's psyche, if only because it didn't. If also because it just, well, also just because it gives Chris Barry, he gets to do so much acting in that episode, because he's not just playing himself, he's playing different psychological versions of himself. He's the voice of the monster that is Chris Barry. Gets to do so much acting.
You're onto something here with a connection back to the
movie. Oh, yes. I was going to say.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
I was going to say.
I actually might float out that if I was to say there was any inspiration, Rimmer might be about as close to like an analog as I. Not that I did this intent, not that there's no intention to do so. Hmm. But just talking about it now, I'm like, that is not a bad corollary by any means.
Well, it's basically me too, that episode, but like times 20. It's like 20 Rimmers, 20 Tim Travers.
Well, I mean, that actually is a direct inspiration. The episode when Rimmer copies himself and he feels bullied by his other self. We have one Tim we call Delta Tim, who is specifically the Tim that all the others just bully.
I'll be honest, guys, I didn't expect to be good diving quite so deep into Red Dwarf with you chaps, like on the chat, but I'm here for it. I'm loving it.
I'm gonna throw one more out there, because now that I'm thinking about it, because this was actually a conscious one. The whole genesis behind the film's villain, which is one of the Tims, and I won't reveal who, but it's one of the Tims, is the idea, because the whole film is about learning to love yourself and low self-esteem, the legitimate fear that if I was trapped in a room full of dozens of other me's, I would somehow still be the least popular one. And that is very much the core of the psyche behind the film's principal antagonist.
You see, like, we put Tim Travers in a completely new context for me now, because now I'm just totally seeing that Red Dwarf, whether conscious or unconscious, or subconscious.
Well, also acting-wise, I think Sam hit on something there. Like, what would Rimmer look like if he was actually insanely competent? Still his neurotic self, but an incredibly competent, smart version.
That's Ace Rimmer,
But Ace Rimmer's actually a nice guy. We never see the nice guy, Tim.
Yeah, so what if he was also a trick?
Yeah. I mean, now you've got to do the sequel to Tim Travers, where you have the opposite, ladies break into the multiverse, and you have Ace Tim and regular Tim. So it's a buddy movie. It's a buddy movie with two Tims, one Ace.
Well, in that logic, we obviously cannot make the film if we can't convince Chris Berry to cameo.
Right. I'm sure Chris will be up for it. Sticking with the acting then, I mean, I guess this is a more general question, but like the cast that you guys assemble for this film, I mean, I don't know whether they're Red Dwarf fans or not as well. I mean, that's another question, but like
Joel
McHale is. Okay, great. We've got one. And then obviously you guys have got Felicia Day and Danny Trejo, these incredible, screen presences. I mean, and you're both in the movie. I mean, I think I mentioned it earlier, Simpson, but like you obviously feature in the movie as this kind of bounty hunter antagonist, kind of killing his way up through the various Tim Travers. And what was it like for the both of you as actors and also as filmmakers, with those guys on set? Because obviously those guys have got so much experience and I'm sure they had some great stories. Like, what was that like?
I was really worried about being incredibly intimidating, but we were blessed. These were all just extremely kind, genial people to work with. And after maybe 20 minutes of the celebrity factor wearing off, it was like working with anybody else. Just really competent, kind professionals. I think one of the memories that will always stay in my heart as a beautiful moment was when we were filming one of the only scenes in the entire film that Sam is not in. And there are very
many day that was.
And it wasn't even a full day. It was like a half day. You had a half day. But Keith David came to set that day and I didn't have a chance to go meet him because we were in the middle of the scene. And when we wrapped the scene, I went over to go introduce myself and meet Keith. And I got over to his dressing room to find him, Sam, and another one of the actors running their scene together. Like, they were already right in the middle of the scene. And I remember entering the room, not saying anything, just leaning against the wall because I wanted to let them finish and just watch it. That was, as a director, a heartwarming moment for me. And they were all like this. We were so lucky with the people we got to work with.
I bet. And then, like, as we say, the movie was made quite quickly. It was a 17-day shoot. 17 days.
17 days.
Yeah, so very efficient. You're doing really complicated stuff. The pair of you, you've got to get it done. I mean, and as I say, you're also sharing scenes together. You're both, playing off against each other as actors. I mean, what was it like working together as actors? And also, by the end of this shoot, did you actually want to kill each other by the end of the shoot? Because it sounds like it was such a pressurized, shoot, obviously, and busy. Like, what was it like working together on that front?
Well, I can't speak for Sam, but I loved working with him.
And I loved working with you too, sweetie.
No, it, like, and I'm not just greasing his wheels. Make of that what you will.
Interesting word choice. All right. Well, I was just going to dance right by that one.
Well, here's the thing is that I had so much work and going on in my head every day, as did Simpson, but like that I really didn't have time to worry about much else other than my stuff and what I was just like. If Stimson was happy and we moved on, great. I'm not asking for another take. I'm not asking for like, you know, I wasn't really feeling that one. Like, it's just like, no time. If it lands and he's happy, we're good. And that is, I think, one of the biggest testaments I have to fully trusting him as an artistic collaborator. So I was just like, well, I don't have to worry about if he's getting the best of me, because he knows exactly what he wants. And that is such a wonderful, safe, you know, blanket to be working with. You don't have to worry about anything but your own stuff. And especially with something that's like this amount of work, it's just like that you need something like that. So it made like every day very simple. I mean, like the task at hand was not simple, but working with Stimson was, yeah, it was a cakewalk. It was lovely.
Well, I am trying to grease your wheels, but the feeling was mutual. There's so much I'm trying to keep track of. Like, most of the crew acknowledged that because the effects were so weird on 90% of the shots, if I said we're good, they would just take my word for it because they had no idea what the hell we were doing. But I've always felt very bad about this. Then I felt like I ignored Sam for much of the production, because there was just nothing I needed to do there. He knew the character. He had this right. He tipped notes very sharply, very fast. Of all of the list of things I'm trying to balance in my head to manage, Sam's good. Unless he needs something from me, there's just not really much for me to check in on there.
That must be such a great feeling then. And for the both of you, like, you know, you can trust your co-pilot and be like, you know, they've got this, and you don't even have to think about it, worry about it. That must be, yeah, especially on, like, say, like such a intense environment as a film set. That must be just a great feeling.
The biggest problem, and we were very lucky because it wasn't just Sam and I, although Sam was a joy to work with. Across the board, we had an unbelievably easy to work with team of people who have no drama whatsoever. They're all happy to be here. They're all game. They're all, maybe they're laughing at us secretly off of the side, wondering what the hell are these two doing, but they were still nevertheless perfectly polite about it and willing to play ball. So our only real enemy on this set was just time, because the sheer amount of material we were trying to film in the time we had was insane. 17 days for a normal film would be ridiculous. 17 days for a film where every time Sam is on screen, we have to reshoot the shot as many times as there are Tims in the scene.
Yeah, it sounds like such a Herculean effort. I mean, like, and hats off for, you know, being able to accomplish it, you know, so efficiently, you know, I guess with what you had. But I mean, honestly, guys, this was such a blast chatting to you. I mean, like, I've discovered two, you know, fellow Red Dwarf fans, you know, out there, you know, which is fantastic. And I didn't expect it in this conversation, but I'm it's fantastic. I'm here for it. And yeah, thank you guys so much for coming on Half the Picture. It was such a pleasure to chat to you. And thanks for the movie. I really, really enjoyed it. And I'm really excited to see what you guys get up to next.
Thanks. Thank you so much.
Cheers, guys. Take care.
Cheers.
Hey everyone, thanks so much for listening to my conversation with Stimson Sneed and Sam Dunning. Remember to like and subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode, and stay tuned for more exciting interviews and guests coming soon on Half the Picture.